Welcome to Fresnolandia. I'm Jordan Maddox.
I'm Donnie Bergstrom. We have a really exciting election episode. We have James Coos with us today. He is Fresno County's clerk and registrar of voters. He has been in office since 2021, first appointed and then voted in 2022. And we also have Lisa Bryant, who is a professor of political science at Fresno State. And we're so excited to have both of you with us today.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thank you. It's a pleasure.
James, what's your job? How do you explain it at cocktail parties?
I actually have two jobs, really, as county clerk. I'm responsible for receiving many of our oaths and many of our other forms, but also providing services to the public, marriage license, passport services, fictitious business names, and CEQA filings. So a variety of filings that aren't handled by the recorder's office, which handles more with property and other materials. And then for the registrar of voters side, we handle all registration and election activities for the county of Fresno and just about every jurisdiction they're in. So we're pretty busy year-round on the election side, along with providing services year-round on the clerk side.
And Lisa, how did you become an expert on local elections, and why did that interest you as an area of expertise?
When I was in grad school, my graduate advisor, her name is Lana Atkison, and I started grad school right after, 2006 is when I started grad school, and election science really was in its infancy, because election science as a discipline was born out of the 2000 election, and sort of the idea that maybe our elections weren't perfect, and there was a lot of stuff that we really had taken for granted and didn't really know about how elections were run.
It took us until 2000 to figure that out.
Yeah,
we needed like a market failure, if you will, in order to have a domain opened up.
We had the progressive era in the 1920s where party machines were questioned. And then most states adopted the Australian ballot and guaranteed a right to a private ballot. And I think people, for the most part, worked under the assumption that, and they still do by and large, right, elections work pretty well in this country. And so really until the spotlight was shown on the 2000 election in Florida in particular, and the fact that election administration or the way that we run elections could cause differences in outcomes and processing time and things like that, we really hadn't systematically studied how elections were run, right? We focus more on voter turnout and things like that. But anyway, my big exciting first graduate project was about election audits. And so we had a very close election in New Mexico in 2004, and that was the second one in New Mexico that had been decided by less than a couple hundred votes. And so there were not very many states that had systematic processes about how to audit elections at that time. And so, yeah, my first big project was basically recreated an entire election process and audited it with real ballots that were used in a real election to see how was the best way to audit an election.
That seems like a really important skill set to have right now.
It has become, when I was in grad school, I remember one of the professors in the department saying, I also study voter confidence, and saying, well, why does anybody care about this? Like, it doesn't matter. You go vote and then your vote is counted and the results are what they are. Like, nobody cares if you're confident or they care about the processes. And so that was in 2010, I think somebody said that. And then
didn't age well.
In 2016, I may have emailed and said, I think people might care about this.
So there's a number of topics we want to talk about today. We're going to start out by talking about turnout and registration. This is an area of interest to our readers and listeners. So Donnie, you want to start with the first question there?
Yeah, so we hit record turnout in Fresno County in 2020. What was it, 72%?
74.6, yeah.
Which is incredible. And James, do you think we're going to hit that this year?
So we're planning for 100% turnout.
Woohoo!
That capability. Now, obviously, that's not really realistic. And I can only, from my perspective, running the election, I can only look at what our history is. And so we did have that record turnout just 4 years ago. And then this spring, in our March presidential primary, we almost had a record low turnout. That's a real flip-flop there. Throw in all of the political changes that have actually occurred over the last 3 months, even just who's running for office, and I don't really know anymore. And so I have to go, all right, we're going to plan for 100 and be ready to help every voter who does show up, and then just wait and see I will encourage everyone to come in early, turn in your vote by mail ballot early so we can get it tallied and out there and available. No delays in voting. And then I go, that's what we have a poli-sci professor around for. What? Because they're the ones who actually research this and how all of this stuff goes on out there. Worse, I have to focus on providing the service.
Are we going to see record turnout, Lisa? And what will influence that in this cycle?
I think that we'll fall somewhere between 2016 and 2020. I think that it will probably be a little bit higher than 2016 because of the changes that we've had moving to the Voter Choice Act and everybody getting a mail ballot. And the move to vote centers has made voting a little bit easier, and having the ballot at your house makes it present. 2020, remember, also people were home, and so you're bored, so you may as well research and fill out your ballot. So we're combating that sort of idea that people have time constraints, and sometimes they forgetting about your ballot is the number one reason people give for not voting. But I think the main thing about this year is enthusiasm doesn't seem to be as high as it was in 2020. It could be the candidates. We've seen enthusiasm fall since this summer. So when Biden announced he wasn't going to be running, and then Harris became the presumptive candidate, and then certainly after the DNC, which really drove up enthusiasm, we've seen it steadily falling since then. And enthusiasm doesn't seem to be as high on the Trump side either, because there are some reluctant Republicans who might be questioning whether or not they want to vote for Trump this year. And so both of those things, I think, could suppress turnout a little bit more than in 2020.
Branching off of that, what do we understand in the scholarly literature about what increases voter turnout? Are there specific things? Is it context specific? Are there general patterns that we can look at?
Yeah, so enthusiasm about candidates can drive turnout. So certainly 2016, 2020, you had really charismatic candidates that could drive turnout. That's one of the things. Ballot propositions are another thing that can really drive turnout. So I always joke with students, right, that one thing that usually drives turnout in any state, regardless of red or blue, is if marijuana is on the ballot, right? But abortion is on the ballot in a lot of places this year. And so in some swing states, like Arizona, for example, that could drive turnout in those states. And because that's an issue that people get really passionate about as well. So ballot propositions are a big way to increase turnout. And that's, California is interesting because we have to think about if people are strategic about when they put a proposition on the ballot, because you have to consider what does it take to make a proposition pass, who's likely to turn out in a primary versus a general election, and then how strongly do they feel about that proposition. So those are a couple things. Bad weather suppresses turnout. You hope it doesn't rain on election day, or snow in cold places, things like that.
What about your football team losing the weekend before? Will that affect voter turnout? I remember that study that came out about those judges that whose sentencing varied according to their football teams. I think it's mostly been debunked, but it's a fun thought experiment to think about other factors or variables.
I think the political scientist in me is obligated to say correlation is not causation.
Yes.
But correlations are fun.
What about family or community ties to voting? When we talk to people out in the community, what we hear sometimes in low voter communities is none of my friends are talking about it, or my family doesn't vote, so it's not really part of my rhythms. And does that show up in the data at all?
Yeah, absolutely. So the nerdy term for that is that you're socialized into participation. So did your parents socialize you to become a politically interested, politically engaged citizen? So in the Valley, this is of particular interest because we have a large first-gen population. And when people immigrate to this country, there's a couple of things that happen. They don't have a high sense of efficacy into our political parties, right? Meaning that they don't necessarily think the political parties care what they think or care about them. But they also don't have a strong tie growing up with this idea that you are aligned with a political party. The other thing, too, is a lot of people might come from backgrounds in countries, especially Asian countries, for example, where there's not a high rate of participation in local elections. In the U.S., we vote for an incredible number of offices. People really vote for, I think that it's something, if you look at all of the things that people vote for in a given year across this country, it's something like 160,000 different offices that we vote for in this country, which is just incredible. That's not the norm in most places. So the ballot can also be overwhelming. And yeah, if you come from a family that's not really politically engaged, you didn't see your parents vote, you didn't watch the news on television growing up, you didn't talk about local politics, you're far less likely to vote when you become legal age than if you grew up in a household where, you know, that was part of your everyday life.
Another question, James. I've read some interesting stuff about voting centers versus polling places. Does that affect voter turnout? And what do we know? I've seen that a lot of counties opt for hybrid models where they have some voting centers and then polling places. How do we think about that here in Fresno County?
In California, we basically have the two separate models of polling place and not. But some of our polling place counties do have some vote center-like support systems as with their polling places. We in Fresno County have switched over to the Voters' Choice Act, which provides vote centers. And while we have, in doing so, moved to having fewer people voting in person in total over the last several elections, the service we're then able to provide is higher, and voters are having a better experience, we believe, and based on kind of the ballots and what we're getting back in going to that vote center. And one of the big things that we've seen there is that in 2016 and 2018, a process called provisional voting, where a voter would go to the wrong polling place. They weren't on the roster at that location, and they weren't supposed to vote on the ballot that they were given. And so their ballot had to be sequestered, put into an envelope, and then reviewed later. We had over 30,000 of those type of voters in Fresno County in November 2016 and November 2018. And we've got that number down to under 100 now using this system, because when you go to a vote center, I can give you any ballot, whether you are from Coalinga and you're visiting in Fresno, or whether you are from the Shaver Lake area and you've gone all the way over to Fireball because you need to go to the markets or something, or deliver something to a customer. They have your ballot in Fireball, so you're not missing out on anything. And you're not being only able to vote on three things because you're not supposed to be voting on the Fireball races. So that service there and the opportunity to be able to come in and say, and it's a joke, but the dog ate my ballot, can I get a new one? You couldn't really do that at the old polling place. You would have to wait in line, get your ballot, fill it out there, and that was your only real option. Now, you can go to a vote center 7 days before the election, say, I spilled coffee all over my ballot, it's ruined, what can I do? You could vote here, but I can also print you a ballot and you can take it home and take your time again to fill it out at home. And voters love those options, having that options there and available to them.
You want to comment on that, Lisa?
Yeah, the way we disentangle it is we look at states. So California Voter Choice Act, one of the requirements of adoption was that every registered voter get a vote-by-mail ballot. And there are states that move to vote centers where that was not a requirement. So we can compare the effects in states where that is and states where it isn't. And what we see is that vote centers and early voting, early in-person voting, can change the way a person votes in terms of the time that they vote, but really where you don't see a huge increase in turnout with that. James said it's better customer service by giving a better experience to the voter. Vote by mail, we do see an increase in turnout because the ballot comes to people's homes, it's there, they don't have to request it. If they don't have time to vote on election day, they have that ballot in their hand for a longer time. And
really,
so long story short, he said it is hard to disentangle because it was 2020, but I think that in general what we find in the research is that vote by mail, when you make it widely accessible, that increases turnout.
I'm curious to hear your answer on this. The people who listen to this podcast are probably more civically engaged than most.
I would guess.
So what we're at Fresno Land, we're always really trying to get as many people to vote as possible. What are the best tactics that you see locally to build that culture of voting with people who are not in that habit?
I guess I can give my answer, and then I don't know if Jane wants to give his official answer.
Well, you go for it. Yeah. Well, my answer is going to be very much, I provide access. I provide the basics. I want to make it as easy as possible for a voter to choose how they want to vote. And I don't necessarily see my office's job of getting someone to actually then participate. If you want to participate, I am there for you. I want to help you and do that. It's a bit more on the candidates and outreach and that side of it there. So I'll support those efforts. And so when someone says, I don't want to do a registration drive or get out the vote drive, we'll provide support, but mm-hmm. we don't drive those mm-hmm, processes. Yeah. So
I would say that most of what we see is that friends and family are the best way to get somebody to vote. Because some of the reasons people don't vote, if there's a person who is a persuadable, that they might have a slight interest, but for some reason they're unsure, usually it's about uncertainty about how to vote. Where do I go vote? How do I fill out a ballot? What if I walk into a vote center and don't know what to do? Or what if I mess up filling out my ballot? So for young people in particular, one of the things that I always suggest is have ballot parties, right? That have your friends over and have pizza and bring your ballots. And you can talk about the issues and you can look at the voter guides and you can look at, I'm not endorsing any particular groups, but 411.org is a website that has, you can put in your address and it'll tell you all the things on your ballot and give you pros and cons about what does it mean if I vote yes and what does it mean if I vote no.
And Fresno Land has a great voter guide
as well. And
Fresno
Land has a great
fantastic voter guide. Probably the best I've ever read.
Yes. But helping people who you think might be interested understand the process. We know that friends and family also are more trusted sources of information than, say, telling somebody, just go out onto the internet. And there'll be instructions on how to fill out your ballot, right? But so if you help somebody through the process, or go take a buddy to vote with you, offer to take someone, and you can't stand in the ballot box with them and stuff like that. But there are voter assist rules, and James can talk about those. But I think that friends and family and encouraging people to vote, and then reassuring people that their vote matters, because I think we're probably in the same boat on this. It drives me crazy to hear my vote doesn't matter. I constantly remind people I was in a state where a presidential candidate lost by less than 350 votes, the entire state. And so I'm like, I point out to my students when we're in class, I say, there are more people in this building right now than the entire state was decided by. And so votes matter. And I think there's this idea in California that for the presidential, your vote doesn't matter, but local races matter, and local races come down to numbers, like, all the time. And so I think James can talk more about that. But that's another thing to tell people. You don't have to try to persuade people on issues. Just that, like, sheer numbers, like, your vote matters. It counts.
So we're going to transition to talking about election integrity. This is obviously a subject of recent interest. James, can you walk us through, kind of step by step, maybe simply, what the counting process looks like?
We actually have two different tabulation processes in Fresno County. You're going to have your in-person process, where a voter goes to a vote center or to my downtown office. Right now it is open and available for in-person voting. And we have a tabulator there at the location. And you will either bring in your completed vote-by-mail ballot, or for most of the voters still, they'll be getting a ballot at the location, filling it out, and then going to that tabulator, and you put it in. And right then and there, it scans it, it tabulates it, the results are added to that location's total right then and there at that moment. We do ask you to hang out for about 8 seconds or so, hear the ding, and that tells you that the machine has scanned it and counted it. And your process is done. The other side of it is that vote-by-mail central count process. So what will likely be hundreds of thousands, at the moment is around 50,000 voters who have returned their vote-by-mail ballot. We collect that vote-by-mail ballot either from the Postal Service, from one of our drop boxes, or one of our physical locations. We bring them over to our warehouse and prepare them for processing, count them, make sure we kind of know how many we're putting into the process. We'll scan each one of those envelopes, capturing the voter's information and the voter's signature on the envelope. And then we compare that signature, using the voter's information from the envelope, to their registration record, so their current signature on file. And in Fresno County, we use humans to do that. We use a computer to scan it, but then we have humans actually doing that comparison. And if several humans agree that those signatures don't compare, the registration signature or your history of registration signatures and your signature on your envelope, then we'll put your ballot into a challenged status. If any of those humans think that those signatures agree, then it's going to be good and counted, and it's going to move forward to tabulation. If we do challenge your ballot, we will notify you. Every challenged ballot gets a notification. We send you a letter. We will call you or email you if we have that information. And you have all the way up until basically the end of certification. So if someone, and we're already doing this for now, we're sending out letters now, you receive a letter this week, you've got 6 weeks that you have a chance to cure that ballot. And all you have to do is return that letter or go online. We've got multiple ways of trying to help someone count that. Once VBM ballot has been counted good, we open the envelope and separate the ballot from the envelope. And it's important to know that at that point there, we can never go back. The ballot is now going to be counted because I can never attach that ballot to the voter again. While it's in the envelope, I can attach the ballot to the voter. I don't look at that ballot because it's a secret ballot, but going forward, there's never a connection from the ballot back to you as the voter, and that's the whole part of your voting being secret in California. We have to unfold that ballot because they're pretty darn long. They don't fit in the envelope, but we don't fold them up. We have to unfold them and prepare them for tabulation, and they go over in batches of 250, and they get run through the machines, and we've got about 25,000 counted already in Fresno County, and we'll continue to do that all the way through until Election Day.
Can people after. Watch this process?
This whole process is open and available for observation at our Elections Warehouse, 4525 East Hamilton Avenue in Fresno, California. That's the south end of the Fresno Fairgrounds. And you just have to check in, and we'll let you go in. We're open from 8 to 12, 1 to 5 every day. We aren't necessarily doing something at any specific time, but we do actually have a board that says what we're doing on that day, so you can come in and find out.
Do you get a lot of spectators?
We actually get regular observers. Basically, from this week until we certify the election, we expect to have observers every single day. And they're coming in to watch that process of us processing the VBM ballots, being able to see us check those signatures, and then move forward through all the steps until we get to tabulation. It's important to note that even though we will count probably 150 or maybe even if we're lucky, 200,000 ballots before Election Day, we won't look at the results of those ballots until 8 p.m. We'll give our first results at about 8:05, 8:06, and I get to see them at about 8 o'clock. No one sees the results of those tabulations to that point. So you're seeing them at almost the exact same time I am. So there's no way to know. I've already had folks call me up and say, so how's it going? Which way the results go?
I know. When I was a kid, and I'm sure this is the same for everyone here, that we used to watch the election returns on election night and know, oh, California just got called for this candidate. And so could you explain why that doesn't happen anymore and why there's such a lag between election day and when we can actually call elections?
I wish it didn't happen anymore, but the media are perfectly happy to call elections on election day. And as I've had several people complain to me when I've been out at public meetings recently, why are they allowed to call, say, state level or countrywide elections 5 hours before or 3 hours before California has even done voting? And that's something, that's a whole different question. And so what I think you're getting at there, why does it take 28 days for California to certify its elections now? And actually this year, it's actually legally required. It's got to be 28 days. It used to be, or normally is, that the counties decide on their own. They could take up to 30 days, or some counties actually wrap up in about 17. And it really comes down to voters wait until the last minute. And California wants to make sure that every voter has the opportunity to vote the way they want to vote, when they want to vote. And that means we will accept all of the vote-by-mail ballots and all the in-person ballots all the way to 8 o'clock on Election Day, plus anything that has been postmarked on Election Day, we'll accept up to 7 days after. So we still have countable ballots that are being delivered to us a week after the election. And that's probably pretty far out on the extreme end for states. Many states, they may have a day or two afterwards. Many of them, it's got to be in at 8 o'clock. If it's not in at 8, that deadline on Election Day, it doesn't count. That would make it a lot easier for us to get final results out if there was that hard deadline. That for us in Fresno County, for the last two major elections, some of our specials, we've had over half of our ballots returned by VBM on Election Day or the day before Election Day. Yeah, it's going to take me a while to count half the ballots.
So if you want earlier results, turn your ballot in earlier.
There you go.
Turn your ballots in earlier, people. So James, after the 2020 election, there were a majority of the Fresno County Board of Supervisors, Nathan Magsig, Steve Randall, Buddy Mendez, who had a lot of concerns about the legitimacy of the election results. Could you recall what some of the specific concerns were after 2020 that came up and how the clerk's office was able to allay those concerns?
As I was a line member at the time, not in this seat, not as county clerk, I don't remember their specific as I wasn't there at the board meeting, but I was part of the process. And then after that in 2021, I was very much part of the process and interacting with them. And we didn't have particular concerns here in Fresno County because we've done a lot of work of really opening up our processes and making them available for everyone to see. And we've had concerns here and expressed by the board about registration, about registrants being in there that died 100 years ago. Well, okay, they were born 100 years ago or 120 years ago, something like that. And wait, that doesn't make sense. Or folks moving around, so what we call basically voter registration maintenance. And so we've had a lot of concerns about that side of it here in Fresno County. But I think I've been blessed really with our board who, while being very interested in elections and in election integrity, are open to seeing our process, visiting, getting that chance to look through and see what we're doing there, and then listening to what we do as part of our state-required post-election processes and the testing that we do. And sometimes they've asked us to do additional testing, and where that's been possible, both within physical reality and monetary reality, we've done that too. And so we've done that kind of expanded testing at their request. And it's really been very consistent here in Fresno County that everything is correct and that all the testing has shown that the machines count correctly, that in fact, the only time we have ever found a mistake is in the recent last 4 years is it's been a human action, someone making a decision that was incorrect. And those things are going to be a problem kind of no matter what, anywhere where we have humans involved.
I know that there was a conversation, I believe it was last year, around what you were talking about, maintaining the voter registration list. I've had a couple of people come to us at Fresnoland just saying, hey, my name's been purged from the rolls. That wasn't supposed to happen. How often does this happen, and what should people do if they've been falsely, you know, gotten off the voter rolls?
So in California and in Fresno in particular, I can tell you that we don't purge people off. Mm-hmm. There's no voter purge or like voter roll cleaning. We do voter roll maintenance. And so we're constantly doing that. One of them, when you talk about purge or something, you're going in there and you're mass removing people, oftentimes really without any good reason at all, the slimmest reasons or whatever you want to do. And in California, we have very strict rules about when you can cancel a registration. So when someone has passed away, when someone has been found guilty of a felony, and only during that time that they are incarcerated, when someone finishes their time and comes back out, and they are re-eligible again to re-register. And our actions are limited in that we have to have basically an instigating situation. If I receive information back from a trusted partner, United States Postal Service, the DMV, California DMV, that someone has moved, I can take action. I can update registration. I have to notify you that I've made that change, but I can't just go in and remove. Someone can't just walk up and say, hey, they don't live there anymore, cancel them. I can't even take action on that. I'm not empowered to do that. So when we see, especially in the last 3-4 years, where someone has come in and told us that you've updated my address incorrectly, that can happen because we're getting information from our partners. And those partners, it's their best available information, but sometimes the DMV, especially 4 years ago, they had a real problem with, instead of giving us updated information when someone would update a license, it was when they would update their vehicle. If they were updating their boat for Lake Tahoe and they now have reassigned your address to Tahoe, that's not a good thing. So there were kind of those mistakes of that nature. But we don't cancel people here in in Fresno and in California in general, because California is very much focused on making it easy on the voter. And that is a big priority in California. And so the legislature has really focused on that side of it. And we do have to maintain process. There is a federal requirement that we do maintain a voter registration maintenance program within the state and at the county level. But the state is fairly tightly regimented on how they do that.
I think to answer the question that didn't get answered in there was, it's really easy to go renew your registration. Just go online and say registertovote.ca.gov or the Fresno County website, and it takes about 3 minutes to re-register and update your registration. And then if you do it by October 21st, you can still get a mail ballot, right? And then otherwise, you can vote in person.
Okay. Another security concern that we see is around drop boxes. What are the concerns and how are we addressing that?
There are concerns about the safety and security of ballot drop boxes and whether or not people can steal your ballots or mess with your ballots. But ballot drop boxes are in all states. There are requirements of what ballot drop boxes have to be made out of. And I believe it's like 3/16 steel. They're thicker than U.S. Postal Service drop boxes. They have security measures built into them that often election officials don't talk about because you don't want to tempt people to challenge them, but they anticipate things like people trying to tamper with them in various ways, and there are security measures put in them. There are security measures about being able to access the ballots in there. In 2020, of course, one of the things that happened here, and you alluded to it earlier, was the creation of non-official drop boxes, and that essentially was a way to ballot harvest, right? Saying bring your ballots here to this location rather than put them in an official drop box. So that's one of the things, is use official drop boxes. They're really well marked. They have the County of Fresno symbol on them. They just have a little slit, so all they fit is a ballot. You can't put other things in that. You could put other kind of mail in there, but don't.
Please don't.
Yeah.
My internet bill.
Right. Don't do that. Your grandma's birthday card. Don't do that.
Yeah, and in Fresno, you can find out where they are. Both material is already in your hands in your vote by mail packet, but it's also online at votefresnocounty.com. You can look up your nearest drop box or your nearest vote center.
Well, a question I have is, in the national media discourse, there's always these concerns coming up about people who are ineligible to vote who are voting. How does Fresno County prevent those instances from happening?
So in California, you must, and in across the state, in the country, you must be a U.S. citizen, 18 years old, and you must attest to that under penalty of perjury. In California, that's on your registration card there. You also have to provide your name, residence, birth date, and an identification number, either a Social Security number, part of a Social Security number, or in California ID or California driver's license. And you have to provide all of that information, and then you sign under penalty of perjury. And as we've actually seen in Fresno and across the state, just that document itself is sufficient. If you fib on that, if you lie, if you commit perjury on that, local DAs, both in Fresno County and then across the state, they will charge you for falsifying your registration.
Does that happen?
We have examples in Fresno. We have actually multiple examples across the state right now. In particular, at the moment, it's because we've got candidates who have done something questionable along those lines.
I think that raises a good point. And one that, because I always get this question when I talk to people about voting too, is, you know, what about undocumented people voting? 3 million undocumented voters, right? And the thing is that if you're an undocumented citizen living in the United States, most of the time you do everything you can to lay low and limit your engagement with law enforcement, and especially federal law enforcement. And voter impersonation is a felony, and you're going to be charged. And if they find that you are undocumented, you're going to be deported. And there's documented cases of that happening too. And it's really rare and uncommon for it to happen. And there's a website where they track cases that have been prosecuted, and it's really small. And so the fact that the idea, if you think about when you go to vote in person, right, you have to give your name, your address. I always say, could I go impersonate you? Do I know your address? Do I know your date of birth? I know your name and I still wouldn't be able to impersonate you because I don't know all of that information. And if I'm voting by mail, I have to have my signature match. And so where are 3 million undocumented immigrants getting ballots and then their signature going to match? They're going to be matched against a voter registration card or a driver's license if that doesn't exist. There's going to be a process. And so it's just not feasible for it to happen.
Yeah, it's, and you get one vote out of it and you have created a paper trail for your own prosecution. It's one of those crime in general. It's a lot of it is not logical, but when you have a monetary gain that you directly get from a criminal act, you can understand. Mm-hmm. There's no monetary gain here. You're voting and,
right.
Oh, now right. You will never be a citizen. They're going to kick you out of the country and they'll probably put you into prison first, then they'll kick you out. So they'll punish you before they then kick you out. So
basically just people need to use common sense when thinking about these claims.
Oh. And then, yeah, it's a political football, right? It's an easy mm-hmm. claim for people to throw out and to sow seeds of doubt and decrease trust in elections. But the simplest explanation is usually the most accurate explanation. And it's, if you think it would be difficult to do, it would probably be difficult to do, right? Yeah. It's just, there are so many checks. This is why I say, you said, can people go watch the process? Go watch the process. I tell people all the time, mm-hmm. if you want to know how elections work and think that it could happen, sign up to be an election worker. You can be an election worker and then you get to learn the process firsthand. Yeah.
What are the biggest concerns that both of you have going into this election around integrity locally?
My biggest concerns are, I'll let you close it out. My biggest concerns are about these false claims. And again, like continuing to fan the fuel of election skepticism. And we're seeing new strategies with new claims pop. I think that those are things people need to be aware of and watch for. There's a lot of discussion around the ability for people to refuse to certify elections. And multiple court cases, judges have said, this is a ministerial process, not a discretionary process. You don't actually have the right to refuse to certify an election legally. It's like the sort of fun analogy is the scorekeeper at a basketball game or a baseball game, right? They're not the ref, they're not the official. They don't get to make the call on whether the ball was foul or fair. All they do is change the scoreboard. The person certifying the election is similar to that role. Mm-hmm. And it's okay if they refuse to change the scoreboard, it doesn't mean that team didn't get the run, right? They still got it. And now you just have to have somebody higher than them come in and force them to. So I think that is one of the big things we're looking at this year. And then of course, again, there's going to be, because it plays so well and it's really easy for people to say publicly is, oh, I don't believe the results of the election. The problem is the people making those claims is that they go viral and people pick up on that and it continues to deteriorate trust in elections. And more importantly, we are already starting to see a rise in threats against election workers and poll officials and election clerks. And some places they've already had, Oregon just yesterday, they had to shut down the voter helplines because of threats coming in about a DMV snafu that ended up with some people who shouldn't have received voter registration being automatically registered to vote. And then also with Donald Trump's campaign didn't put in a candidate statement for the voter guide. And so then the election officials were accused of intentionally taking his statement off. That was a campaign choice not to put a statement in, but the election officials were being threatened as trying to rig election outcomes or make the election go one way. So those kinds of things are, I think, the things that concern me most is that sort of misinformation and disinformation that people, it's so easy to spread and so hard to correct.
Yeah, and from our perspective, it's really a concern about kind of the process disruption as we're going forward. As Professor Brian mentioned there, with Oregon, they had to shut down what they were doing to help voters because of misinformation. I mean, easy to verify information that spread and people just believed it. And so we work very hard in Fresno County to be open and observable. So at our vote centers, we've got spaces set aside and an observer can go in there. You do have to identify yourself, so because voters have to know if someone's around, what's going on, whether they're there to help them or whether they're just there to watch. And they're allowed to be there every moment that we are open. Everything that we're doing, we have there and available. And then we follow all of our steps and all of our testing and we make that all available there. It's providing that information, but then having someone come in and not just that they distrust the result, but that they are going to sit there and yell it at the loudest voice possible in the middle of the vote center. Mm-hmm. And it's, no, you can't do that. There are limits. And thankfully, the Supreme Court has agreed with that, in that California has very pro-voter stance on how we kind of protect our vote centers, our voting locations, but also very held back. We give the benefit of the doubt to anyone coming in, but there are limits. And so when we run into someone who doesn't want to accept those limits, and what does that then kind of disruption at a voting location or at our warehouse, when we say, you can see the whole process here, but I want to stand directly. No, you can't go there. There's confidentiality and other things that we have to protect. And frankly, my worker doesn't want you standing within their personal space. They have rights
to We want them here. To be focused on the task.
Right. Yes, they want, yes. Yeah.
Creating different kinds of issues.
I do work them hard. I like them to be comfortable when they're working hard.
So absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah. Let's close by talking about election disputes. This is something that's come up. How are recounts and audits managed by Fresno County? And if Lisa, if you want to jump in to talk about the costs of recounts, because—
Yeah, recounts are fun.
Yeah, recounts.
So we do 1% manual tally audit. So 1% of precincts are randomly pulled, and then we do a manual tally of those to make sure that the results match, and people can watch the audit too. And basically it's to give confidence that the results that we counted, that were counted the first time, get counted the second time. And if there's a discrepancy in them, then ballots are examined very closely by teams of counters to make sure that the results are accurate. And that's pretty much how manual recounts work across the entire state. Some states have risk-limiting audits, which is where you randomly select particular ballots out of each precinct, but we do full 1% precincts get audited here. You can talk about the cost of recounts.
Yeah. In general, once a election is certified, any voter of California can request a recount for just about any race out there. The requester is the one who is responsible for paying for that recount. Now, depending on where you are and what race, there may actually be rules. Some counties have rules where the county will automatically do a recount at a certain level, but there is not a general rule for that for most races. There are for some state level races where the state will do an automatic recount. And going forward for next year, there'll be some additional stuff on that. But at the local level, it's going to be a candidate or campaign. Sometimes an interested party will get involved as well. We actually saw that in the Bay Area where we had a tie race, and it was one of the other, it was the candidate that was ahead in first place, not the tie at second and third, that actually paid for that one. But anyone can request that recount. And then we actually get into the fairly specific details that we'll actually go in and work with that requester to determine how they want to do the recount, what they really want to look at. In particular, in modern recounts, the last 4 years, and especially going forward, the interest isn't really in the ballots that have been counted anymore. Because as I mentioned, we've done testing. Our new machines are 100% accurate. There isn't really a question on what's been counted. What's been counted is what it's going to be the same, whether it's a human or the machine counting it again, it's going to be the same.
Well, so the humans are much more likely to make errors.
They are, but we use so many of them, and they do it over and over again, they'll get the right answer. It just takes a while, and that's where money starts to come in. But the real interest is actually in VBM ballots that have been challenged. Those ballots that haven't been counted yet, how can those be added in? Provisionals or CVR, same-day registration, conditional.
And this is like where there's a signature differential where...
Yes.
So match your signature to your driver's license.
That's one route, but you got to be careful. It's got to be to your registration, and your DMV signature might be in your registration, but particularly for our younger voters who may have only registered once, that might not be the case. If you've registered many times, if you've moved many times, if you've gone to the DMV a bunch, it's likely that we have several samples of your signature. And so, yeah, that could be a safe way to go. But for someone, even like myself, who registered once when I was turned 18, and just 6 years ago, I was challenged. I had not re-registered in that whole time. And my staff came up to me and said, is this your ballot? because your signature has changed too much. We're challenging it.
That's comical.
And I had to re-register. I've re-registered a couple times since then. So I have several samples in there. More samples we have, the more likely we're going to be able to get a comparison match.
So if you register when you're 18 and you had a heart over your eye, you should probably change
that. I've got hearts on my eyes.
As long as you keep those hearts there. I will say recounts are expensive.
Yeah.
There is manual processes that are going on there. We have to go find those ballots. We do not sort ballots in Fresno County. Our focus is on getting the ballot counted because the taxpayer does pay for that tabulation. Our focus is to efficiently use that taxpayer money to get the result out, not to do the recount. So whoever's requested the recount does have to pay, and so we have to find the ballot. We're eventually going to have to count them in one way or another. To have anything matter in a recount, every ballot involved in that contest must be recounted. So just because you found two vote-by-mail ballots, which now are going to count, and that would flip your... No, we have to count every other single one by law. So they do end up being potentially very expensive. It really depends on what type of content. I can't say, it's going to be 10 grand or this. You ask me to do a congressional seat and it could be hundreds of thousands of dollars. Doing one for a local, a smaller city could be just a couple thousand.
We're going to close today with our favorite segment, which is what we're loving this week.
I got to say, I'm right now loving that we've actually found that 1 week of fall in Fresno County, mm-hmm. and we've jumped from those 100-degree weathers, and it's now actually comfortable. I was able to walk over from the office and be comfortable coming over. You do that a month ago, and I had been just dying by the time I got over here just because it's 110 degrees.
So true.
So, and it obviously hasn't gotten too cold yet, and the fog, although we did have one day where we had fog already, it hasn't come in yet in that grayness. So appreciate that we've got the one day of fall to enjoy, or 1 week of fall here.
Yeah. Lisa, what are you loving this week?
Loving that Abbott Elementary is back on because I missed it over the summer.
I haven't watched that.
Oh, it's so great. It's about this inner city school in Philadelphia, and they're always lacking resources. It probably sounds familiar as a school teacher. Mm. And it's about the sort of bonds that they form as a teacher family within the school and how they support each other. I don't know. It's just so great. I love it.
And they're willing to do a crossover with It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. So that right
there.
That's
a sales pitch right there.
I'm not even from Philly. But there's great Philly jokes in there. Yeah.
Fantastic.
I don't know. Am I allowed to say name brands?
Of course.
I love Dark Horse from Crowan Wolf. I'm loving that.
Oh, yes. That is one of my wife's favorites.
That's an indulgence.
She directs us to that place so she can have that one specific thing.
Yeah, it's great. It's
boysenberry and vanilla, right? Yeah.
So. It's like a seltzer. You can get it at Moto, too. It's great. They almost always have it. And I don't want to give shout-outs, but Goldstein's almost always has it. Rip my hood.
Exactly. So.
Donnie, what are you loving this week?
Two things. Can I say two things?
Lisa said two things.
That's
absolutely
true. Okay, so my husband and I just celebrated our anniversary at Tabachines Cochina in Northwest Fresno, and it was Oaxaca week. And so through Hispanic Heritage Month, every week they're doing a different state of Mexico.
Did you get some moles?
Cool. Absolutely, we did.
Yeah, tell me.
I mean, it was mole and it was good. I don't know.
Okay, fantastic.
I'm not,
yeah.
Sorry.
What color was it, maybe?
It was brown.
Okay.
It was chocolate.
I mean, coloradito,
negro.
It was
really good.
Lots of options.
This week they're doing Jalisco, and I think next week they're doing Michoacán, but don't quote me on that. Yeah. But it's been really fun to see the menus for that. And then I've been diving back into the early 2000s show, The O.C.
Oh, oh really?
It has not aged well.
I have too many questions now.
It has not aged well.
Okay.
It has not aged well.
So for me, what I'm loving is the month of October is the month where I watch horror movies. I don't watch horror movies any other month of the year. I reserve them. And so I am watching a movie that I've watched before, but I found a version that's been colorized and is being there's a new adaptation that's coming out. interestingly, like around Christmas time, and it's called Nosferatu. It's one of the original kind of like vampire monster movies, and I found just a colorized version of it on Amazon Prime, and I've been rewatching it in excitement and anticipation for this remake that's coming out later this year.
But you have to wait till next October to watch the remake.
That's... maybe I make an exception. That's what we're loving this week. Thank you all for listening, and thank you both for coming to spend time with us and helping us better understand election processes and what to expect. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
This has been Fresnolandia. I'm Jordan Maddox.
I'm Donnie Bergstrom. And this podcast was recorded at Sun Stereo Warehouse in downtown Fresno. Audio editing and mixing was done by Jordan Maddox. Our lead image comes from Vaughn Ballinan, and our song comes from Stateless Rat.